This is Drew Mackey, and you're listening to Singing Mountain. Say you live in North America, and let's say you go to Australia. If you're taking in some nature there, there's a chance you might see what looks a lot like a hummingbird. It has a long, slender beak that it uses to suck nectar out of flowers. It has a brightly colored, iridescent head, just like hummingbirds do here, and it can even hover helicopter style like a hummingbird. If I showed you a picture of this bird, I imagine most of you would say, "Yes, that is a hummingbird. I know what a hummingbird looks like." But it's not. The bird you'd be seeing out in the wild in Australia, or other parts of the world, but let's say Australia because this is actually a real story that happened to me, is actually a sunbird, which isn't particularly closely related to the hummingbirds we have in the Americas. Not only are hummingbirds and sunbirds not the same species, they're not even the same family or order. You have to go all the way up to the class Avis, which is all birds, hummingbirds and sunbirds, but also owls and flamingos and ostriches and parrots. The reason why these two types of birds seem so similar is that they are examples of convergent evolution. A niche existed in nature, and separately, two different creatures evolved to fit it because it just happened to be a good strategy. There are tons of examples of this in our world. Do you know what sago palms are? They are plants you see a lot in yards here in Los Angeles, and just looking at them, you'd have every reason to think they are palm trees. They're not. They're not even remotely related to palms. We just call them palms because anyone who's seen a palm tree would look at these and say, "Yep, that's a palm tree." To give you an example of something that's kinda sorta video game related, there are hedgehogs and echidnas. Being covered in spines is a pretty unique look, and a person who grew up around hedgehogs would have to be forgiven for seeing an echidna and saying, "Oh, we have those where I'm from," even though the animals aren't related beyond both being mammals. But when Sega was trying to pick a rival for Sonic, they decided Knuckles would be an echidna because they look fairly similar. Why didn't they pick a porcupine? I don't know. But thanks to Sonic 3, a generation of kids knew that the platypus had an even weirder cousin species that was covered in spines. Thanks, Sega! Yes, I'm going somewhere with this. I'm sorry for Rachel Maddowing you, but I wanted to explain my approach to this episode. Sunbirds and sago palms aside, this is actually the third installment of my series looking into the connections between pop music and video game music. In the first episode, I talked about Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson, and in the second one, I talked about Bone Thugs and Harmony. If you haven't heard those, I'm linking to them in the show notes for this episode. In this third installment, I'm talking about three 1980s-era rock bands, in addition to a lot of other artists that probably have never been spoken about in any relation to video games before. You've been listening to music from the first Mega Man game this whole time, and now I'm going to make you listen to a track from this game that is almost infamous in how it's connected to mainstream music. Here is the theme to Elecman Stage from Mega Man 1, composed by Manami Matsumae. I think I've said before that Matsumae deserves a lot of credit for her work on the first Mega Man. It's catchy video game music, but it also set the tone for what every subsequent Mega Man soundtrack would sound like. Even if you think Mega Man 2 or Mega Man 3 is the apex of Blue Bomber music, it's this game that established the fundamental sound. Elecman, of course, is the electricity-themed robot master in this game. And by the way, did it ever occur to you that he's weak against Cutman's weapon, the rolling cutter? Because snipping wires is a good way to shut down an electrically powered machine? I see what you did there, Capcom. In a 2011 interview with Akira Kitamura, the director of Mega Man, he says he told Manami Matsumae that the game's stage music should echo the boss's theme in some way, and that in Elecman's theme, you can hear sound effects that represent electricity. I think those pulsing noises you hear at the start of the track are what he's referring to, but it's the part that comes next that I'm concerned with in this episode. The melody that begins with a da-da-da-da. And apologies, because I'm going to do a tiny bit of singing in this episode, even though I am not a good singer. You probably know where I'm going with this, because most people who know a thing about the first Mega Man's music know that Elecman's theme sounds a lot like the song Faithfully by Journey. Have a listen.
I will run into the midnight sun. Wheels go round and round.
Like, you can't miss it. I'd actually wager that there are a lot of people my age who maybe only know Faithfully because it has been documented so widely online as being something that sounds like Elecman's theme. Mega Man came out on December 17th, 1987. Faithfully came out on February 1st, 1983. On Journey's 8th studio album, Frontiers. Obviously, Manami Matsumae ripped off Journey, right? I mean, come on. In Japan, Mega Man's name is Rockman. His female buddy is Roll. The characters are very often given music-themed names. The reference seems like it must be intentional. The composer, however, says that's not the case. About a year ago, GTV, the YouTube series by the user Gajillionaire, did a video about the song. In it, it's noted that Journey certainly would have been familiar to Japanese audiences before Mega Man came out, but Manami Matsumae wasn't, according to her at least, and they know this because they asked her about the similarity and she responded. Quote, "I have heard this from many people, but when I was composing music at the time, I didn't know any songs by Journey. Even if I had, I wouldn't have done such a daring thing," by which she means copy a song, "because it would have come out in public. Some people have said it's plagiarism, and it hurts me slightly, but the songs are very similar, and I don't think there's anything I can do about that now." Go ahead and watch the GTV video. I'm linking to it in the show notes. I just think it's impressive that they actually got Matsumae to respond. I say that as someone who has reached out to a few Japanese composers for this series and have heard back from exactly zero of them. So, good job, GTV. I have no reason to doubt Matsumae's sincerity, and I gotta say that it kinda makes me feel bad for her to hear that she has the specter of plagiarism floating around her for this one little similarity. Like, she did a creative thing, and here are these people in the United States being all, "Yeah, but Journey?" Even in the comments to the GTV video, there are people who are saying that they think the similarity is not coincidental without offering a reason beyond, "because I can hear it." There are the people touring Australia and saying, "Yeah, I'm 100% sure that this is a hummingbird," because they haven't made room for the possibility that they don't know what they're talking about. I wanted to look a little further into this and maybe find out a little more about these similar melodies. The GTV video notes that Journey's Faithfully has two other connections to pop songs. First, when Prince wrote Purple Rain, he checked with Jonathan Cain, the songwriter of Faithfully, to get his blessing because Purple Rain had chord changes similar to those in Faithfully and because Prince didn't want to get sued. The story was recalled to Billboard magazine a few days after Prince died in 2016, and Journey guitarist Neil Schon said that the fact that Prince did this, that he asked permission first, spoke well of his character. I listened to Purple Rain with Faithfully in mind, and I hear it, but not the part of Faithfully that sounds like Elecman's theme. The other connected song is All the Right Friends by R.E.M., a song that was first released to the public back in 2001 on the soundtrack to the movie Vanilla Sky, but which R.E.M. actually recorded back in 1983 for the band's studio debut album, Murmur. Have a listen and see if you can figure out why it gets mentioned in this discussion of Mega Man and Journey.
I know you say, maybe someday,
The track did not make the cut, but the fact that Murmur was released on April 12, 1983, about 3 months after the Journey album featuring Faithfully, means that the songs were probably being worked on around the same time. Which, if true, would mean that the REM guys and Jonathan Cain independently came up with these very similar melodies, and then Manami Matsumae did as well a few years later. This left me with two questions. Is there something about this melodic construction that would appeal to songwriters? Like, does it elicit a certain effect on a listener, maybe that all these songwriters were going for? And the second question is, are there more songs out there, more songs with this similar element? I'm going to answer the second one first, because I actually knew of another example off the top of my head. Way of the World, a Cheap Trick song from the album Dream Police, which came out in 1979. Before the Journey album or before the REM album. I know it's not as close as the other ones, but it's still very similar. Springboarding off this, I did some poking around online, and I also found... Marianne, a 1980 track by Human League.
I take one look at you, it leaves me breathless. I see your dreams come true, you're not so restless, or light, or bright. Marianne.
The 1982 song Change by British rocker John Waite.
People talking, and they're saying that you're leaving.
Bon Jovi's 1984 song, She Don't Know Me. A 1989 song called On the Edge by a band called AWOL. A 2008 Eurobeat track titled Back to the 80s by High Energy Man, that's NRG Man, that might actually be an intentional tip of the hat to the Journey song, seeing as how it's called Back to the 80s, but here I go anyway.
Get me back to 80s, baby, back to 80s. Please don't go away, I need you to stay.
Never Surrender, a 2010 track by a band called Giant. Follow Your Heart, a song that sounds like a 1980s rock track, but was actually put out in 2012 by an Italian band called Sunstorm. Every Praise, a 2013 gospel track by Hezekiah Walker.
Let me hear the worshipers? Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to
the theme to the 1985 animated series Mask, written by Shuki Levy, who also wrote the themes to Inspector Gadget, He-Man, and She-Ra, and most of the other shows you remember from this period. By the way, this is one of the few not to use the shared melodic element in the intro. Steal My Girl by One Direction, and yes, I'm surprised as anyone that I found a reason to play One Direction on this podcast. A little aside here, in that Billboard article I mentioned about Purple Rain, Neil Schon specifically says that there's a One Direction song that he thought sounded too much like Faithfully. Quote, I was upset about it and I just let it roll. I'm pretty sure he's talking about this song. It's just my guess, but it's pretty close. And finally, the stage select theme from Mega Man 1 by Manami Matsumae. Like, it actually kind of does sound like Electman's theme, and it's in the same game, which means Matsumae liked it so much she used it twice. Though it should be noted, also sounds like Bon Jovi's 1984 track Runaway. Clearly, I need to stop. So obviously, it's something that gets used a lot. If not identically, then similarly enough that someone says, hey, this thing kind of sounds like that other thing. But why? I can read music, but I'm not a songwriter and I haven't played an instrument for a long time. So to answer that question, I asked a bunch of people who are and who have. I'm going to start with the big guns and say that one of the people who shared thoughts with me was Carl Brueggemann, who is not only a musician and a songwriter, but the co-host of Super Mercado Brothers, which is probably the most technical VGM podcast out there. Carl and his brother Will talk about music from video games and don't shy away from using the proper vocabulary for various musical constructions and techniques. It could be very educational, and that's why I was happy to have Carl educate me. This is how he explained the similarities between Electman, Journey, and REM. Quote, it's a pretty simple idea, melodically and rhythm-wise, with lots of repetition. The rhythms here start with four dotted quarter notes. The harmonies typically change, but the melody repeats a few times. That repetition with changing context, plus the rhythmic displacement, is very pleasing and quite a common songwriting technique. Add the descending progression, and it's a very emotional and powerful effect. As an example of a piece of VGM that does something similar, a repeating melody with a changing descending progression, though with a slightly different melody here, Carl suggests the main theme to the Sega game Space Harrier, composed by Hiroshi Kawaguchi. Thank you. actually reached out to a Gamerly friend who does music here in Los Angeles, Nick Loyacano, to ask him what he thought was going on here, and he actually came up with the exact same VGM example of this happening outside a Mega Man game, which is neat. Annalise Nelson is a songwriter here in Los Angeles, and she also happens to edit Singing Mountain's podcast network sister show, Smartmouth, and she also knows video games. And she pointed out that the Mega Man, Journey, and REM tracks have melodies circling the third degree of a given key's scale. That is, if we're in the key of C major, the third degree would be E. So it's E, then one note down from E, then one note up from E, and then E again. So E, D, F, E, E, D, F, E. Again, if I'm not actually hitting a real E there, it's because I'm a terrible singer, but I actually think Annalise is right. She also points out that this is an example of an ostinato, a repeated musical phrase, and that is a word I only know because I listen to Super Mercado Brothers, and if you listen, you will learn fancy music vocab also. Annalise points out that one of the reasons this technique gets us to feel emotions is that the melody goes above and below the third degree but never resolves to the tonic note, which in this case would be C. And we want it to do that, but we don't get it to do that. Quote, "We as humans, when presented with repetition without resolution, feel tension and frustration. Think of it as musical etching," which is probably the best metaphor for an abstract musical structure I've ever heard. Thanks, Annalise. So that's what it is, but why does it seem like it's showing up a lot? I would love to say that we've stumbled onto some secret key to pop songwriting gold, but it's actually much more boring than that. It's actually like the hummingbird and the sunbird seeming like they're connected but actually not being connected at all. They got that way because it works. It's an effective strategy for survival. And kind of similarly, what we're hearing in Elecman's theme and Journey and REM and a bunch of other artists is something that exists simply because it sounds good. It conveys emotion, and it's used at the beginning of songs to hook you in as quickly as possible. This is how Carl put it. People who don't write music definitely have trouble understanding how common and totally fine it is to have a similar idea as someone else. Music simply has common elements that happen time and time again, and it's usually because the element is great. I say all this because I don't think it's fair that Manami Matsumai should feel any sense of badness for accidentally creating a melody that's similar to this one Journey song. Because a lot of other people have also done it, and it wasn't Journey that invented it in the first place. And I hope in having the similarity explained by the people I'm quoting in this episode, the people with experience in the subject matter, that someone listening would be less likely to decide that, yeah, she probably did it on purpose. And furthermore, if that person perceives a similarity between two things in the future, musical or otherwise, maybe they'll hold off before they decide that one must have ripped off the other. My friend Nick says that this kind of thing is more likely to happen than not. Quote, "There are only so many notes and only so many chord progressions that sound pleasing to the ears, so it's inevitable that you'll end up writing something that sounds a bit or a lot like something else. Sometimes it's unconscious." And then he went on to talk about how he wrote this song that sounded like a Modest Mouse song, even though he'd never heard the song before and actually had never heard of Modest Mouse before. But the end result was that he put it aside because he didn't want the perception that there'd been any kind of intentionality there. Convergent evolution is a thing. It's maybe worth mentioning that I'd actually planned to do a robots episode of Singing Mountain 2 or 3 weeks down the line, and I'd been putting the playlist together for a while, and this very week, Super Mercado Brothers did a robot-themed episode. It was good. And though it happened coincidentally, I'm going to retool mine a little bit and maybe save it for a later date. These things happen. I have one more thing to point out to you before I wrap up this episode. Even though I spent the last few minutes cautioning you from reading intentionality into coincidences, have you ever seen the cover art for Journey's Frontiers, the album that Faithfully debuted on? Go look it up. Or I'll put it in the show notes too if you just want to see it from there. But it's a face. And it's a face that has like technology on it. So it's like a blend of tech and a human face. You might say it kind of looks like a robot, but the robot has big blue eyes. And it also has a helmet. And the helmet is blue. Yeah, the album art looks a lot like freaking Mega Man. It's very weird to realize this, and I have absolutely no explanation for how this could have happened, other than that coincidences are coincidences. Super weird, though. For each installment of this series, I'm posting the text at singingmountainpod.com, including clips and any relevant sources I used. As always, you can listen to all previous episodes of Singing Mountain at singingmountainpod.com, that also anywhere else you'd normally find a podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or criticisms about Singing Mountain, the easiest way to reach me is on Twitter, either at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, or at singmopod, S-I-N-G-M-O-P-O-D. You can also follow Singing Mountain on Facebook. Just search for Singing Mountain and then click on the one that is not a bakery. And if you like pixel art, this podcast is on Instagram at Singing Mountain Pod. Please subscribe, and if you like the show, give me a rate and review, because those are helpful for reasons you hear on every podcast ever. The show is written, produced, and edited by me, Drew Mackey. The cover art for this series of episodes examining VGM and pop music was designed by Jude Buffum, a pixel artist whose work I really dig. You can check his stuff out at his website, judebuffum.com. Special thanks to Carl, Annalise, and Nick, whom I mentioned earlier in this episode, but also a few more people who gave me some insights about music so I sound less stupid. Donna Swanson, Dudley Sanders, and John Wedgeworth. Amy Smith is the copy editor who cleans up this text after it goes on the website, also so I look less stupid. Hi, Amy. Singing Mountain is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network that features some really cool shows, including two others that I host. Check them out at tablecakes.com. If you want to support Singing Mountain or any of the other shows on the Table Cakes network, please do so at patreon.com/tablecakes. In 2006, Capcom put out Mega Man Powered Up for the PlayStation Portable. It was a remake of the original Mega Man with updated graphics and two new robot masters, Time Man and Oil Man. It also featured Toshihiko Horiyama's rearrangements of the original music by Manami Matsumae. I'm going to close this episode with a redone version of Elecman's theme from this game. And when you hear it, notice how at the very start, there's these rock and roll sounding drums. Upon hearing it for the first time and getting this episode together, I at first thought, oh, they're going to do it in a rock style. They're going to close the loop and finally get even more like the Journey song that's been compared to for years and years. Nope. It goes off in a different direction. And it's not bad, but it would have been so much cooler if they'd really embraced the rock and roll connection here. Here is Elecman from Mega Man Powered Up, composed by Manami Matsumae, but arranged by Toshihiko Horiyama. See ya. Ooh.